is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Buehler has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Seahawks lose again yesterday, Brock, and in awfully familiar fashion. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Last 2 weeks have seemed almost identical.
Yeah. Yeah, and the two Rams games, very, very similar, although this time you got your crack at it. This time you had all three timeouts, and this time, well, you got the ball back with about 90 seconds to go, and the opportunity, like so many of these in these five losses, all one possession losses, to go and rewrite a different script. I was so ready, Salk, to come in here. I was so ready to come in here and just like, wow, what a win. This is the kind of win that propels you to the playoffs. And this team that is so far ahead and they're retooling. As you look around the league and you see that Cincinnati is buried and these teams have quit and Detroit's awful. And you can just see these teams that have no juice. They got no life in them. And here's these Seahawks once again going toe-to-toe. And I swear to you, I thought when I pulled into the house, so we were at the Husky women's basketball game. Haley had a little recruiting thing, so we were there. And I was tracking on my phone before I came home to watch it. And we got in with about 90 seconds to go right there. The minute and a half, I'm rushing through the neighborhood. Sorry for those tracking speeds. But I got in the house, and I was so ready. I was so ready to just celebrate. They're gonna make this happen. The whole family's actually staying and watching, right? They got first and 10 now at the, 35-yard line. It's going to happen. They're going to make this happen. And we're going to come in here on this Monday on a short week and have Pete and be so doggone giddy. And yeah. Then the air just came out of the blue.
Yeah, minute 24, no timeouts is not easy, honestly. That is not an easy...
For a touchdown? No.
For a touchdown.
For a field
needing
goal?
A field goal, it's no problem, and they would have gotten there.
Yep.
Needing a touchdown in that spot, that is not easy. That's not something that you should be automatically expected to do 100% of the time. But you know what? That's the gig, man.
Yep.
That's the gig. They were in this game because of Russell Wilson. I'm not sitting here torching Russell for the way he played yesterday. I thought he was great. Honestly, I thought he played really well. We got to see his legs again and all the things about Russ that really make him special and have given the Rams fits over the years. Holding the ball in the read option, scrambling when he needed to, getting out of bounds, managing the clock, kind of in control of everything. I thought Russ looked really, really good yesterday, right until the final four plays.
Mm.
And unfortunately, and I don't know that that's a play that he should have made on the final throw, but that's the job. Find a way to score in that moment and win that game. If you want to be elite, and I think Russell is, you got to continue to show it. And this year, thus far, Brock, in these final possessions, he hasn't shown that.
Well, these are your QB wins, man. I mean, if you said it 4 or 5 years ago,
yep.
you argued against everybody that kind of hammered you on that point. And
this is a QB loss.
Yeah. I mean,
this is why it matters.
Yes. I mean,
you had the shot to win that game.
Yep.
That's not all on him. Of course not. There's other things that go into it. Maybe this team could try, I don't know, stopping an offense on 3rd and 15 two straight weeks. That's a problem. You know, there are a bunch of other things that factor in. I don't know why you're running the ball with 4 minutes left down two scores. Brian Schottenheimer needs like a little hello. But overall, Russell played really well. Not good enough to win.
Nope. And unfortunately, I think that's been a lot of the theme this season. I'm not as quick to put all of it right on him in that situation, and understanding this is the way they have to play when you're retooling this season and you're matching up against teams that have superior speed, have superior depth, have superior playmaking offensively. This is the way you're going to play it. You're just going to run it. You're going to shorten this game. You're going to keep it at about 9 to 11 possessions, which is where it has been against the Chargers, where it was against the Rams yesterday. And when you play it that way, your margin of error becomes very small in that fourth quarter.
Half, you got to find a way to do it. In the second quarter, you can't completely go in the tank and decide you want to give CJ Procise some carries. That didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Can't turn the ball over.
Can't do that. That's for darn sure. And you got to come up usually with a turnover yourself, which is, I think, why they tried the onside kick. So, look, it doesn't go the Seahawks' way yesterday, and there's certainly a lot of frustration that comes out of that one, a lost opportunity. On the other hand, man, this team is fun.
Yep.
Man, this team is enjoyable to watch. Man, they are better than anybody thought they would be. And if you listen to Coach Carroll afterwards, cut eight, he's pretty darn excited for what they're doing himself.
That kind of fighting, that kind of battling, take you a long ways. We don't care where we go or who we're playing, it don't matter. We're going to go, and we're going to battle. It's a good football team over there. They do great stuff. They're having a great run of it right now, and they deserve a ton of credit. Sean's doing a fantastic job. But on this day today, it pretty much went nose to nose and battled it out. And congratulations to those guys. But, man, I love these guys, the way they went after today. It was awesome.
Coaches like Bill Pullman and Independence Day.
Yes.
Like, all right, coach, I'm in. I'll follow you, man. Yeah. Strap your whatever up and let's go.
Follow you in the darkness.
I don't know. How pumped up, as down as Pete sounded on Monday with us.
Yeah.
That's how up I thought he sounded after the game. And not just there. Listen to Cut 12 as well.
We want to win. We want to get going. And go back to the first two games. We were so far off the first two games. And I don't know what the points were. It was like 6 points or something like that. We weren't even close to playing the way we could play. So we just have to stay alive. We got to keep going and keep this thing going as we finish this year. Jeez. A lot of games coming up at home. We got to make a surge here and see what we can do. And I like our chances. I don't care who it is or where it is. It doesn't matter. I don't go on the road. These guys don't care about playing on the road. It doesn't even matter at all. And that's a great characteristic of a team that has a chance, you know, to do something.
Today we declare.
All that's missing is inspirational music. Like, we
True.
Just need to set that to like some slow rising music.
Our Independence Day. Like, if you give Pete the music, man.
Liddy, I think Howdy's capable at some point in the show of putting that together.
Forget Thomas Rawls, man. We got Coach Pete after that.
You know why he's giddy, I think, in my opinion there, and we'll ask him here at 9:30, because, Mike, they're just brand to playing physical, not intimidated whatsoever, and actually be, in many ways, the goons and enforcers. His team was. They ran for 273 yards. Yes, Russell was a big part of that, but you ran for 8 yards a carry. Rashad Penny got going, had over 100 yards on the game. Didn't matter who it was. You put a 330-pound monster in Jordan Simmons at right guard. Right, oh, how are you going to do without Fluke? Oh, I'm going to miss. Yeah, the Warrior was missed to a degree, but that kid came in there and did his part. And then when Aaron Donald wants to lose his mind, Justin Britt says, "Let's go. You know, I'll jack you 10 yards on the sidelines. Don't go celebrating. We're not going to get walked over. You're not going to physically embarrass us like you have in the past." And I think, quite honestly, that's why the coach is a little bit giddy. I would be, right? If I'm in a retool and I'm trying to turn this thing and I want to be a run team and I want to be a physical team and I want to be an intimidating team, I got to see a lot of that over 60 minutes versus a 9-1 ball club that's going to win this NFC West going away.
You and I have really clamored for them to run the ball and even to do so at some really key spots. I think they've done it. I mean, there's no doubt that their ability to hang into these games, I think, has come from that success and commitment to the run. Does it need to be corrected? Has it overcorrected a little far to the point where they're running deep into the second half, down a couple scores?
Yeah,
we're on second just, and ten.
The only thing I would say is it's really hard in the NFL at 4.7 yards a pass. So yesterday, you just, other than Lockett's 20-yard touchdown in the red zone, you just didn't have an explosive, you know. And part of that was the pass rush.
Until the final drive.
Yes,
right?
You just didn't. Yeah, you had Dixon on one of those,
and Lockett.
But you just had so little of that for the first 45 minutes of that game.
Well, contrast that
really
to the Rams.
Oh, it's just
explosive play after explosive
chunk
play.
After chunk after chunk after chunk after chunk.
Why can't this offense generate those same explosive plays, those same chunks?
Yeah, that's a fair question, especially when you get the run game going. You would think you'd get that intermediate right behind it. I mean, it's what the Rams do. The Rams, I thought Romo was good in that point. They run like five plays. They're like a wing T offense that then throws like an in cut in the corner because you're just, everybody is left there like watching, where is this thing going? Where is the ball? Where is Waldo? Oh, it went right behind my ear. So, yeah, they're pretty efficient at it, and that's the one area, that intermediate passing game for the Seahawks. That needs to be added over.
Well, they don't have Robert Woods and
nope.
All the rest of the groups that's running in those, you know, Brandon Cooks and all the rest of them. But, geez, you sure would like to see some of those next steps. And unfortunately, in this game, I don't know if it's the predictability. I don't know if it was the protection. I don't know what it was, but they were missing that next component.
Man, I thought they were going to get it done. Even as we're sitting here 9 minutes into the show, I quite honestly, seriously, I thought, you say this all the time, you think they're going to win. Did you think that they were going to get it done
when they
were to 30?
But I will say my heart pounded in that. I think that's as hard as my heart's been pounding in a long time. Like, I could hear it over the TV. Like, dude, you've got to relax. Make that heart stop pounding like this. It was so exciting watching that team play yesterday. And unfortunately, it ends in disaster. All right, let's see what we need to know. Hello.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, some negative, some positive, but overall it's a loss. Seahawks fall to the Rams in another close game. 36-31, the final for the second straight week. Made every attempt to come back from two scores down late, but once again fell just short. Team now 4-5, with Green Bay coming in on a short week on Thursday night for really what is a must-win game if this team wants to make the playoffs. I'll tell you, I really liked watching Rashad Penny show his stuff yesterday. It was great to see him finally get going. It was fun to see Russell use his legs really for the first time this year. Fun to watch this defense come up with the big stop they needed at the end, but unfortunately that 3rd and 15 they give up and Russell just unable to complete the deal. Not good enough on a day where you really need it to be against one of the NFL's top teams.
Yeah, it's so strange with this club. And while Coach, I think, is so giddy and so excited about the effort, you know that he's equally frustrated because this program's built on competing and it's built on the ability to finish. This team's actually started. They scored 3 opening touchdown drives, including yesterday. They had 29 first downs, 15 rushing first downs, and nearly 300 yards rushing against the Rams. But it's not how you start. You don't win a game in the first quarter, even though you're up 14-10. You win games in the final 15 minutes. And some giveaways and turnovers, some sacks, and the inability on those final drives to just get over the hump. It's why this team is number 9 in the playoff chase. Yeah, and a must-win desperation mode come Thursday night at home.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Dominant win for the Cougs, a 31-7 victory over Colorado on the road. Close game early, but they really pulled away in the second half. Ended up being a convincing victory. They now have to win the Apple Cup only to get to the Pac-12 championship game. Arizona will be in their way at home before they get there, though. Man, Gardner Minshew is free and easy, man. He is as loose as a quarterback you can find in all of college football. Accurate in control of his system, using all of the playmakers around him, Brock, and finding a way to beat some teams in the Pac-12 that really aren't up to that challenge.
Yeah, it was, man, it was really cool to see the Cougars up close and personal. I'll get to do it again. Our crew is going to be on the call Saturday night, a 7:30 late night kick on a, looks like going to be a beautiful, clear, very, very crisp evening by, obviously, come Saturday night in Pullman. But we're excited to get back and watch those guys. It was quite a story. The mustaches, Coach Leach put on the mustache at the end of the game, had some fun. Gardner was not great in that first half. The swirling winds, there were a bunch of shots missed, but I love the patience that team had. The patience to play 60 minutes, to not deviate from who they were. If you watch the broadcast, didn't fall asleep in the second half, you saw Mike Leach repeatedly bring his offense and then ultimately his team together between the 3rd and 4th quarter to finish. Not just finish a woebegone Buffalo team, but knowing against Arizona, and maybe much more importantly against Washington, it's going to take 4 quarters of execution.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Trade rumors swirl this weekend for the Mariners, many of them right now centering on pitcher James Paxton, who could certainly bring back a decent haul. Yankees, Dodgers, even the division rival Astros, all rumored to be among the most interested. Look, they're going to trade James Paxton, and they absolutely should. You would love to see them bring back some value for him, some young players that could really help. But I got to say, I would like them to stay away from the Yankees in that deal. I think Yankees and Red Sox prospects, and to a lesser extent the Dodgers, but mostly Red Sox and Yankees. Their prospects get overhyped, and I understand that the Yankees have had some guys recently that have come through the system, but those are guys they kept. When's the last time? I mean, the Yankees just don't often trade prospects away who turn out to be good, and so I would prefer to stay away from that.
Yeah, I know the argument is, I'd lose this argument, and the argument of, you know, what created this issue for the Mariners over the last 17 years of missing the playoffs. We talked about this last week. It is their lack of ability to hit on first-round picks. But I will also say some of their trades have been devastating as well. In the trade of Adam Jones and some of your blue-chip guys, you've got to get difference-makers back. And when you trade Cliff Lee, you've got to get difference-makers back. And James Paxton is a blue-chip kind of guy. I don't know where he is in the whole offseason as far as people all around Major League Baseball, but a lefty that throws 98 that threw a no-hitter last year, they have got to be right on this. They got to be right on their draft picks. And when you get the opportunity to trade someone of Paxton's just size and capabilities, they better hit some blue chips coming back to Seattle.
All right, there you go. 3 things you need to know every morning right at 7:10. I got a chuckle. I was watching your game. You guys did a great broadcast. And the stuff with Minshew afterwards and Ben and Leach is just hysterical. But did you happen to catch Allison right at the beginning? Maybe it was the end of the first half, beginning of the second half. She was like, and the wind down here is swirling sometimes up to 10 or 12 miles an hour.
Yes.
Like, what?
Yes.
Where'd that come from?
Yeah. Well, I think I said to her, I got a little
10 or 12.
Yeah. I'm like, it's a lot more up high. Like, when we do that report next, we may need to get that thing up high because down on the field, yeah.
I meant to tell you, yeah. I was going to text you about that, and I didn't mean to laugh. I just, yeah. I don't know, 10 or 12 miles an hour. All right, let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
I am so addicted to the Beanie Babies that I've got to try to sell everything back.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Kind of a chippy game out there, huh? What was it like on the sidelines?
It was crazy. I mean, because you could see that they got into the head of the defensive lineman of the Rams in the sense that it was so bad that whatever they were doing on the offensive line, Aaron Donald was so mad that they kept him out the second possession the Seahawks had for all but one play, and that was the play that they ended up getting the touchdown, and it allowed Seahawks to drive all the way down the field. It's almost like they gave him like 7 points on that one because Aaron Donald couldn't control himself, and so the coaches just sat him down, and so then he came back and just dominated like he usually does. But yeah, that was chippy, and you can see that this rivalry is getting worse. I guess you can say better and better and better, or worse and worse and worse as far as the physical thing. Then of course you get Dante Fowler in there making a nasty word that he gets a 15-yard penalty. Yeah, it was really chippy.
Were you in that scrum? Were you down there when Justin Britt just launched Aaron Donald? I thought I saw you pulling guys apart, no?
No. That would be J.R. Sweezy. He's one. He's joking.
Could see how you guys could get confused.
Yeah,
you and J.R. look pretty similar.
Were you on the other end of
I was on the other end.
Oh,
of
yeah. I was hoping you'd be right in the mix.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I was, too, could be able to see what was going on. But, yeah, again, this was pretty nasty between these guys.
Is that a good thing?
It is, yeah, because I think you can see that this team's not going to be intimidated. The Rams aren't going to be intimidated. And so I think you can see that how close things are starting to get as far as where this team is in comparison to the Rams. But still, the Rams just have a better team.
What'd you think of Russell?
I thought he was good. I mean, it was different because, I mean, it's like they didn't ask him to do too much because they ran the ball too well. 273 yards, which I never expected that much, particularly without DJ Fluker and Chris Carson. So I never expected that. I mean, certainly it has to be a little bit of a concern that, you know, what was it, like 48 yards or so through most of the third quarter because they just didn't really get any receiving yards. And then, of course, he was able to bounce back in the fourth quarter. Thought all that criticism that he has for not running the ball, he ended that.
Yeah, why do you think he was so active running it? Do you think he's feeling better or just, you know, in this game, he was going to have to do that to get him going?
No, I think he was trailing. That was the big thing because, I mean, his pattern is that particularly even more so this year, but it's been always that when he has to pick up the game, then he's going to run. And so whether that's going to be the third quarter, the fourth quarter, and this game turned out to be the fourth quarter, I mean, he just picked it up and ran. And so that's just what Russell can do. And I think you saw that he ran very well. And he pretty much, with only maybe two exceptions, got the got the yards, but also didn't get the hits because of his ability to slide.
Were the Rams receivers as open in person as they were on TV?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah,
because I think
Because I think what you saw is that they gave a little bit more zone coverage, and so that gave them the underneath stuff, and because it's so tough to get to Jared Goff with the way that he drops back and the way that they have all the fake plays and all the motion and stuff like that, it's just so difficult to be able to get in there and get pressure.
And then Todd Gurley is another weapon with another 100-yard day. I mean, how good is that? Obviously, the Chiefs statistically are a little bit ahead, and the Saints went wild yesterday. But the teams that you've seen in person, is that the best offense you've seen?
Yeah, I think because I think it's the deepest offense you can see because, I mean, well, now they will have to see about Cooper Kupp. I mean, he's got a knee injury and he could miss some time and that could hurt them. But that three receiver set is so good with what they were able to do because you look at the Saints, I mean, you know, basically it's one receiver. I mean, they've got one guy, Michael Thomas, and then they got three young guys. I mean, a third-round draft choice, an undrafted guy from a year ago, and then they brought a rookie up from the practice squad. That's all they have at the wide receiver position. That's why they're going to sign Brandon Marshall today and get just so they can have a little bit of experience there. And so if anything happens to Thomas, they're in big trouble.
What does the path to the playoffs look like now for the Hawks?
Well, it's still there, but there's two complications, and it's two 6-3 teams that, one, they lost to Chicago, and two, two that they play in Carolina. You know, those are the two teams you wonder about, because the Falcons had an uncharacteristically bad day in Cleveland. They lose. They're now 4-5. You know, the Seahawks got helped by Dallas. Dallas winning. So now you have Philadelphia and Dallas at 4-5. That had to help. But what you have to worry about, you have a Chicago Bear team that could really just kind of break your heart, because they've got an easy schedule. And I think what happened now is that their key game is going to be Thanksgiving, because of what they have a road game coming up against Minnesota that they'll probably lose. But if they can go into a Detroit team on Thanksgiving and win and sit there at 7-4, then they've got a real good shot with their closing schedule to maybe get the 9 or 10.
Which NFL team over the weekend had the biggest win? And equally, which team would he look at and say, uh-oh, that is one bad loss?
Yeah, I would have to say that Tennessee had the biggest win, because they were able to get a win against the New England Patriots, a very decisive win. I think that was really good. And then I thought that, you know, maybe it was probably, well, the Jets, I mean, even though you don't care about them, the Jets
gracious.
Had a devastating
loss. I care about them. My play-by-play man, Bob Wischusen's the voice of the Jets, John. I care about them deeply.
Yeah, but I mean, to lose 41-10, come out of the game with three and outs, have the fans booing like crazy, their defense playing bad, Morris Claiborne coming back after the game saying the team laid down. I mean, that to me was just a horrible loss. You know, really, it was kind of a weird day in the sense that there was only three close games.
Yeah.
Everything else was pretty much blowouts.
Todd Bowles getting fired?
After the season, yeah. I think so.
How about Dirk Cutter?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, he took over the – now remember, they were doing pretty good on offense and doing horrible on defense. And so Dirk takes over the play calling, and they score 3 points.
Yeah.
That one worked out real well.
So we're going to have this discussion next, maybe throughout the day, certainly into tomorrow. How would you answer this, John? Why are the Seahawks starting so well? And once again, up at the end of the first quarter, another opening drive touchdown, something they didn't do for like 2 years.
Yeah.
They've done 3 times this year, but now just 1-5 in one possession games. Every loss has been a one possession game. Why are they not finishing as well in your estimation?
Well, they're finishing well. It's just that they make a mistake or two, or they make a bad decision or a questionable decision in the fourth quarter that costs them where you get a penalty. For example, I did not like the onside kick that gave field position to the Rams, and they come down and score. Then you have the fumble by Russell Wilson that Dante Fowler caused and was able to recover, and that sets up an easy score. So now you're trying to overcome 14 points, and you know, the one thing with this team, as I think I said it on Friday, the margin of error for this team, particularly against better teams, and the Chargers and the Rams are better teams right now with talent than Seattle, that's what's going to cost you and put you in a position where you can try to come back at the end and just fall, you know, a couple plays short. And so that's what's happening right now. Now this thing should turn, because you look down the road the rest of the season. All right, is Carolina better? Debatable. They got a better record. Is Green Bay better? No. I mean, they're 4-4-1, and you know, they're not playing great ball. So now if they can win these next two games, and remember, Brock, you were the one that said it, that they can survive 2-3 against the 5 good quarterbacks and still make the playoffs.
Yep.
And so if you still buy that, which I think is still viable, then you know, because they got still 3 games against NFC West teams that aren't any good, you know, 2 against San Francisco, 1 against Arizona. So if you come out 5-6, you know, that gets you to 8, and then you have to do something with the home games against Minnesota and also Kansas City.
Yep, that means winning Thursday. That means this becomes Thursday night.
Thursday's pretty close to
must-win. If they lose Thursday, they're done.
Yeah, I think that makes a pretty good sense. John, thank you. Your show coming up at 10 o'clock. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. John Clayton with us every single morning at 7:15. All right,
I thought I saw him with his fanny pack in there.
Yeah.
I really did. Yeah. I thought he was going to get right into that scrum with Donald and Brett.
Who wouldn't want to? I mean, when those two guys are throwing haymakers.
Seriously.
You want to get right in the middle of all that.
Who do you take in that?
What do you mean?
Do you take Britt or Donald?
I don't really want either one.
I think I'd take the heavyweight champ, man. I think Britt would have flipped him over his hip and then done some damage.
Wrestlers, man, watch out.
Yeah, they understand leverage.
It depends. Is it the battle to, you know, succeed in the football game, or the battle to succeed fighting?
No, just the fight. No, just the
fight. Maybe Britt's got a shot in terms of succeeding in the football game.
Yeah, that guy's pretty good.
Donald seemed to have his way with just about everybody.
Yes.
All right, coming up next, Brock, it is the question, why can't the Seahawks finish? They have done everything else so far this year except the thing they are known for. We'll ask that question. We'll try to answer it. You can as well. 206-421-3776. If you want to jump aboard, it is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
All right, Brock and Salk, 206-421-3776. Easy chance to get on the line today with Veterans Day and fewer people at work and probably listening to the show today and interested in going through all the details and breaking down what happened with the Seahawks yesterday, Brock. But ultimately, and you're right, this is why I look at quarterback wins, what happens at the end?
Yeah.
I need my quarterback to find a way to lead this team down the field at the end of the game with it on the line. And for the second straight week, needing a touchdown, understood, Russell was unable to quite get that done, even though he came so close in both of them.
Yeah, so why are they not finishing?
What is it? Why are they starting well and finishing not as well?
Yeah, I think ultimately in many of these, because you look at the number right now, 1-5 in these one possession games and seemingly a chance in nearly every one of them at the end. It feels that way and it doesn't. And it doesn't because it's been such an uphill climb in almost all of these games that you're digging out of a hole. You know, against Chargers, you're digging out of a couple touchdown hole. And that game yesterday, you just never could really feel like, especially in that second half, that you were ahead, you could kind of play your style. And then with the fumble and the quick touchdown, all of a sudden, oh my gosh, you know, now we're in the exact same mode you were in the week before and needing two touchdowns and two scores. And in this case, you could win with two scores. Last week, you were only hoping to tie against the Chargers. So I think, on the surface, I would answer it that, is that you're just constantly, unlike years past, where it's back and forth and you may be down a field goal, but you controlled a lot of that action. Your defense just never let things get out of hand. And this year, you're just playing chase and catch mode, seemingly in all of these games. And there's just not enough in the tank collectively as a group. Receivers in the passing game, I think the depth of the plan in that way, and the drop back passing game, as I heard Jay Keep say last week, and I would agree with him, is the one area where Russell, when you want to stack him up against the other top 5 to 10 guys at his position, is the one area where he doesn't quite stack up with those guys.
Does he have the weaponry for it?
Well, he doesn't have, Mahomes' weaponry. He doesn't have Goff's weaponry. He doesn't have, Drew's weaponry. He doesn't have Aaron Rodgers' weaponry. So, no, I think it's some of those guys, it's straight drop back. But then again, those guys don't have a group that can run for 270, including their own talent that can be a part of
it. Well,
I
understand that. But at the end of the game, when you need to throw the ball out of the pocket, does he have the weapons out there to do it?
Yeah, I think.
Does he have the offensive coordinator to do it?
Yeah, I would say that as far as the pecking order again of what they have and what they don't have, that's not going to rank very high. But but Doug Baldwin's effective. Tyler Lockett's caught a touchdown in every game but one. You know, and David Moore, unfortunately, the last couple weeks, gosh, I would have loved to have just seen Russell. And I know he gets hit on that play on the second down. Just keep it in bounds. As much as the Rams have struggled to cover on the back end and that ball sailed out, you know, he wasn't going to necessarily throw a pick and keep it in harm's way on second down, but I would have loved to have at least seen a 50-50 ball. That became a 0% because it sailed out of the back of the end zone on second down. So that's one that, you know, in all of those situations, you got to have a Michael Thomas. You got to have somebody that you go to in a one-on-one that I'm like, yep, I'm going to throw it up, and he's going to make the play. He's going to make it happen. It's certainly not going to be intercepted, but my guy is going to make it happen, and I don't know if Russell quite has the confidence in that right now.
It's weird. You know, one thing that's bothering me about this whole thing, Brock, is we have forever said, and I buy into Pete's philosophy. I really do. I buy into running the football throughout the game, but one of the things it's supposed to do is wear the other team down. I mean, part of the idea of beating on guys like Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh the whole day is that at the end of the day, they should be exhausted.
Yeah.
They've been they've watched you run for 270 yards. They should be exhausted. Why are they getting to the quarterbacks as successfully as they are in the final four plays?
Yep. Yep.
What am I missing? Yep, that should not happen.
Yep. I think that's fair. I would probably say
Russell was forced out of the pocket on each of the final four plays.
Yes. I would probably say to a degree with that one is you've also got to have the other parts that complete the circle. You do have to, in some ways, have a defense, Mike, that, you know, either takes the ball away or just doesn't give up chunk after chunk and touchdown and point after point. I mean, the last 2 weeks, the defense has given up nearly 7.5 yards a play. So there is some complementary element. Like, if you're going to run the ball and you're going to do that and you're going to wear people down, well, your defense has got to at least do some of their part at some point to either take the ball away or, you know, just limit some of the damage. And you haven't had that complimentary football.
206-421-3776. Let me grab Daniel's in Pasco. Good morning, Daniel. What's on your mind?
Yeah, part of the reason I think why yesterday they weren't in position to win at the end of that game, they had the chance, but not as good a position as they could have been in, is the way they handled the end of the first half.
Yeah.
I lost my mind when there's a minute left. Yep. They're on the plus side of the field with three timeouts. And you're not even attempting to try to score a touchdown. He's playing for a long field goal.
Yep.
And I looked at my wife and I said, he's coaching scared again. He's playing not to lose the game right now. Instead of playing to win and trying to put himself ahead before halftime, he's coaching not to lose. And that drives me insane. And I feel like UW does the exact same thing.
Yep.
And I thought I told my wife, I said, you watch, that'll come back. And they will end up losing the game because instead of needing 3 points to try to win, they're going to need a touchdown. And that's exactly what ended up happening.
Yeah, that was frustrating, Daniel. Thank you for the phone call. And, it's much easier to look at the final drive, right? It's much easier to just look at the missed opportunities and the sack fumble and, oh, my gosh, and just focus on that and not look at it in totality. But I think that is a worthy discussion right there. You know, in that moment, you did not want to give the Rams.
That's not Pete, though. Pete generally is incredibly aggressive, often too aggressive.
You did not
this
want to give the Rams
the ball. This is the guy who fakes field goals at the end of the half because he's so obsessed with trying to get a touchdown in that spot.
But in that spot with a minute to go, either his quarterback, coordinator, that triumvirate, head coach, offense coordinator, quarterback, the three of them, instead of we're getting points and scoring a touchdown, was the Rams aren't going to get the ball back. The Rams are going to get it back to start the second half. We are not going to give them any opportunity.
I actually think that was the right thing to do. I got to be honest, man. You can't lose the game there. If the Rams score twice, you're done. Sorry. The way that game and the way that – I'm sorry. I disagree with you. I really think they needed to get a field goal in that spot, and I'll criticize them because if they do, then it's a three-point game that they're coming down the wire there at the end, and they need a field goal to tie.
Yep.
But I'm sorry. You absolutely, under no circumstances, can let the Rams score twice there. If you do, you've lost the game.
Yep. Yep, so that was...
That's not conservative, that's smart.
Yeah, that was their reasoning, and I get that to a degree, but you've got to find a way to execute. If you're Russell and you're that offense, if that's the way you're going to play it, not necessarily for a touchdown,
you need the field goal.
You then have to get one more first down.
I agree, you need to get one more first down, but you can't give the Rams the ball back. Yep. If they score two touchdowns in a row there, you might as well go home.
Can I just ask
there
you
is
something?
No second half.
Did the receivers look as open to you for the Rams as they did to me?
Just wait till we get Bob's question of the day. I think they looked pretty open to everybody.
My goodness.
I mean, they had hardly a contested catch the entire game.
Yeah.
I mean, Shaquille knocked away one, there's one or two where they had to make a catch like under pressure.
Trey was on one of them.
Man, most of them were just open.
Oh.
Just wide open. Including the 3rd and 15, which we're going to talk about a little bit later because I don't know whether Coleman bit on the wrong thing.
Yeah.
He kind of tried to explain it later. But, there were some really, really challenging moments for that defense.
So ultimately, how do you answer it? Why? For you? Can you sum it up in a sentence? Why are they 1-5 in one possession games?
Why is that
column that was littered with QB wins in the fourth quarter?
I think their offense, which is so geared towards the running game, is not able to make that transition when it needs to late. And I love what they're doing early, but I think that combination of Schottenheimer and the play calling, and maybe it's the wide receivers and Russell being on the same page, but there just doesn't seem to be the ability, because they've spent so much time and energy effectively running the ball, to be able to turn the switch, which you need to be able to do at the end of the game.
Yeah, there is not...
They're running the ball 4 minutes left. What was that?
Yeah, they're... Well...
What is Brian Schottenheimer doing?
That is to make sure that Aaron Donald and Sue aren't teeing off.
Come on, man.
That's what that is.
You got 4 minutes left. You need to get down the field and you are running the ball.
And they did, and they got down and they scored, and they had all three timeouts, and kudos to them. They had all three timeouts. That's why they got the opportunity and to drive with 90 seconds to go and put themselves in position and had shots into the end zone to try to get that win that is just right now
elusive.
Yes,
a little elusive. All right, we got a full set of takeaways coming up in 20 minutes, including the big smile on Jared Goff's face. Before we get there, though, one disappearing Seahawk. Where'd he go? Brock's got the answer. Coors Light's Blue 42. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for three good football questions after a big weekend worth of football, all with Brock Heward. Here we do it every day at 7:45. It's Coors Light's Blue 42. Don't forget, Pete Carroll will join us at 9:30 this morning. Brock, let's start here. What happened to David Moore? Remember when he was catching touchdowns and kind of the new thing? They cut Brandon Marshall. And what's going on with David Moore?
Yeah, he only has, it's pretty remarkable. You look at the numbers here, 14 receptions on the season. Through now 9 games this year, just 14 receptions. Now, 4 of them have been touchdowns, and they were some of those big plays. But 14 receptions on 24 targets. That is the second worst rate on this team, trailing only a guy that is no longer here. And that's Brandon Marshall, who had 11 catches on 23, less than a 50-50 shot as far as those targets go. And I think that, you know, the word you always say with young players, and that's just urgency. You know, the number of times that I would hear Tom Moore or Mike Holmgren or coordinators or Peyton Manning or I'm sure Russell Wilson, man, you want to play fast, just never in a panic. That's the best way that I've ever heard to define urgency. I need you to play fast. When you run that curl route on third down, I need you to have a sense and feel for what's going on around you. Just come back to me a step. Just help me out a little bit. Just gain some more of that just comfort and that bond between you and I that he obviously has in spades with Doug and he has with Tyler, but finding that other option outside. And he's getting the chances. I mean, he's getting them ahead of Jerron Brown. They cut Brandon Marshall, you know, because they really wanted to elevate him. And since that, the last couple weeks, you've just not seen, I think, some of that, I don't know, that bond, that comfort level, that trust, take the next step. And it's got to over the final 7 games. I think Russell will keep giving him some of those shots and some of those chances. But, boy, there's got to be more than 14 of 24 down the stretch.
All right, question number 2. Seahawks had the ball deep into Rams territory on that final drive, Brock. They needed a touchdown with about 35 seconds left or so. What did you make of their final series?
Yeah, let's walk through this. First down, you spike the ball after the scramble. I love that. You just, I think it would have taken another 8 to 9 seconds to get everybody lined up, and I want 3 more shots at it. So if you don't spike it, I don't think you get 3 more shots at it. So I like that spike, and then you come back and you try to take your shot down the field. Unfortunately, Aaron Donald does what he does. And he gets on Russell just enough. Even with that, I would say to Russ on my little coaching sheet, just keep the ball in bounds. Against these Rams secondary guys, and as much as they have struggled, and they didn't make a play on the ball over the course of the day, and they haven't played the ball great in this stretch defensively, just give David Moore a chance. And once that thing, when he got hit, sailed out of the back, I went, uh-oh. Now it's 3rd and 10. Now this thing is going to start to get into a little desperation mode. The 3rd down, I'm throwing, and Tony Romo drew it up. He's exactly right. I'm throwing a deep out or a curl or something to the field and just get another 10 or 11 yards. And they don't. He throws to Nick Vannett incomplete. Now the whole game comes down to that 4th down scramble. And I know this is a Bob Stelton question at 9:15, so I can't answer it now. But is that an absolute have to? Does he have to complete that pass? I would love to see him do it. But the degree of difficulty with Aaron Donald on his hip and a defender right in the throwing lane on only a 15-yard route left a very, very, very small margin of opportunity for Russell.
That's a heck of a lot of touch if you could do it.
While running full speed?
Yeah.
Yes. It's a lot of touch.
It's a floater.
It's a lot of touch if you're in the pocket. When you're running absolutely full speed towards it, and it becomes really difficult to do.
All right, question number 3. Well, I think I know the answer to this based on watching and listening to you during the game on Saturday, but is Gardner Minshew a Heisman finalist?
He is. He is. He's on my Heisman ballot. I'm going to get to vote for 3 of them because of what he's done for this team at 9-1. And you and I see this Arizona game a little bit differently. I think that this is one you absolutely have to win, A, to keep your playoff hopes alive, and B, to keep the whole train going of confidence and belief and momentum heading into the Apple Cup. That right now, if I had to vote, he would be 3rd on my list. Tua would be 1. Kyler Murray at Oklahoma would be 2. He'd be 3. And Mackenzie Milton down at Central Florida would be 4. So I think he deserves that opportunity. He leads this country in passing. He's leading a Cougar team that nobody, and I mean nobody, saw in this kind of position late into the month of November, and it's because of him. When you're around that team and you just see the influence he has, and when I asked Mike Leach ultimately why did you make this decision way back when in August, and did you know then that this was possible now? And he said, well, pretty clearly it was a competitive battle, but he was the one that constantly elevated people around him. And that's what Heisman Trophy winners have always done, and that's what I think he and why he's deserving of a trip to New York City in December.
There you go. That is 3 questions for Brock. Coors Light's Blue 42 every day at 7:45. How about the end of that? Mike Leach, Gardner Minshew there. I mean, Brock, first of all, you look good. I like the look in general with the nice sharp slate gray.
Yeah, no big zit on the chin.
No,
that was positive.
You looked good. Yep. You're kind of showing up, Bob, but you look good.
Yep.
And then at the end, you get the great interview with Mike Lee. Well, first you put on the mustaches yourselves.
Yeah, we tried to do that total deadpan, and usually I'm pretty good with that stuff.
Yeah.
The thing was crawling off my face. I could feel it. Like,
that's
oh,
tough.
Gosh, what if this thing falls?
That would have been perfect.
Probably should have just
that probably
would
have been good. Yeah, just
probably.
Don't kill the bit.
Yep.
But then Gardner Minshew made the bit for you. At the end, he slaps a mustache right on Mike Leach while he's doing the post-game interview.
Control the ball.
It's a little mustache.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Minshew mania, the mustache sensation has taken over Pullman and much of the country. How can you describe what he has meant to this team?
Well, I don't know. I don't even think he had a mustache when I recruited him. I don't recall. And then he's got more than a mustache, too. And I don't know why everybody only notices his. A lot of these kids have mustaches. Anyway.
And now you do, too. You're rocking.
No, I do, too. All right.
Congratulations on the win.
All right, thank you so much.
Oh, man, there are so many funny parts that if you were to break that down, oh, my God. So funny. Is it the anyway that's
all
anyway?
Of it. It's the body language. I'm in a minivan where we were busting. Colorado was so nice, got us a golf cart to avoid some traffic. We bust out there. I'm in the back of the minivan for 50 minutes on the way to the airport. Dave Freed is driving. Bob's in the front seat, and I'm just giggling the entire time. I'm looking at all these pictures, that video, the people's response to it. He is, as a tweet said, a national treasure.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
He's a unique human being.
College
man.
Football is so much better to have him a part of
that
it.
That is for sure. All right, we got a full slate of takeaways. Seahawks fall on the road to the Rams. There's some good, some bad, and some in between. It's all next on Brock and Salk.